Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We are in the midst, of course, of a great national thrash about what should be learned from and done about the recent, happily narrowly averted attack on an aircraft flying into Detroit on Christmas Day. The president is much consumed with this. We're hearing, well, it seems daily from him about what lessons he's learning. And we thought we'd get a second opinion, if you will, from our friend and colleague Daniel Pipes, the director, founder and director of the absolutely splendid Middle East Forum in Philadelphia. Daniel Pipes is indisputably one of the preeminent scholars in our country on matters involving the Middle East and the ideological underpinnings of the enemy, the terrorist foes that we face. I have found the most accurate term for describing this, Sharia. Daniel Pipes is a man who knows vastly more about this, so we'll talk with him about how best to describe it and how best to think about it. But I'd like to start with a terrific piece that Daniel published in the Jerusalem Post on the 6th of January under the headline Security Theater, I would say Theater of the Absurd, now playing at your airport. And Daniel Pipes, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It is absolutely marvelous to have you with us. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Frank, and same to you, and thank you for the kind words.
Thank you. Tell us what your thesis is in this piece about the security theater that the Obama administration is bringing to our airports.
It actually applies both to this and to Fort Hood in somewhat different but analogous ways. The key point, and it's not just the Obama administration, it's the Bush administration as well before it. The key point is an unwillingness to look at who the individuals are, what their makeup is ideologically, and to use a short term, to profile.
Mm-hmm.
There's an insistence that we cannot do that. Norman Mineta, who was the Secretary of Transportation at the time of 9/11, put out a regulation a few weeks later saying there can be no looking at ethnicity, race, or anything else.
Right.
And this has been sacrosanct since then. It applies to Fort Hood, and that's why the head of the Army said, we can't do anything about this, in effect. Yeah, this is
diversity is so important, we mustn't allow it to be jeopardized by this unpleasantness.
These are our guiding lights, and by implication, he's saying, were we to look at who Hassan is, we would be profiling. We can't do that.
Yeah.
And likewise, it's even clearer at an airport, where increasingly Western security is looking at weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And that is
not intentions. Daniel Pipes, in this piece in the Jerusalem Post, which you can also find at your marvelous site, danielpipes.org, you recount a story that's now lost to memory for most of us from 1986. And I wonder if you might just give us the short form of that particular episode and its implications for today.
An extreme leftist Palestinian in London got involved with an innocent Irish girl and got her pregnant and said he wanted to marry her in Israel and sent her with a suitcase on El Al. She was the
from which she was traveling separately, though, interestingly.
Right. Yes, yeah. He sent her separately with Semtex at the bottom of the bag.
This plastic explosive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the El Al security guard asked her a bunch of questions. None of them, she couldn't answer them, although he had trained her and she had various answers that made no sense to him. He mm-hmm. took her aside and they looked closely at the bag and found the Semtex. Now,
which she was unaware was there. She'd just been handed the bag. This is why they always ask you at the airport, did you pack your own bags, right?
And she said no.
Yeah.
Which she could have actually said yes to had he allowed her. Anyway, they found this out because of the questioning. It was low tech. It was conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that it would have been found. It was very cleverly done. The Semtex had been put into the bag very cleverly. It would mm-hmm. not have been found except yeah. that she was chatted to. And we don't do that. We don't talk. We don't ask, who are you? Where are you going? Why are you going? Where are you staying? Who do you know? We don't ask those questions.
Right.
And therefore, we cannot do that. And then I conjured up a scenario, which is even more, which is actually the ultimate scenario, I think. What if you organized, say, 20, 30, 40 people, strong martial arts types, have no weapons whatsoever, but they take over a plane, just with brute force, and maybe the knives from first class, who knows, and they command you the plane. How can you stop that by looking at technology? They have no bombs, they have no guns, they have no knives. They're just using their brute force. How can you stop that?
Right.
It has to be, of course one should look for weapons, but in addition to that, one has to look at who the people are, and that, whether it be Fort Hood or Northwest Airlines or anything else one willing to do, because that is seen as endangering civil harmony and the like. Now, what's
Daniel, let me just reintroduce you. Daniel Pipes, the director of the Middle East Forum, which can be found at www.meforum.org, also his own website, danielpipes.org. Just since I've interrupted, let me just say, Daniel, that obviously precluding people from putting blankets on their laps for the last hour of a flight, or getting up and going to the bathroom for the last hour of the flight, for example, or sitting with their hands in their laps, or any of the other steps that the administration, I gather, is talking about or has actually implemented so far, are not likely to pass muster with you.
I mean, because this guy, Abdulmutallab, did it the last hour, therefore the last hour is more dangerous than the second hour, the third hour?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
And why can't you go to the toilet in the middle of the flight if it's a long flight? And
right.
It just
right.
makes no sense. But I think something interesting has happened the last 2 weeks, which is that not just we on the right, but also the liberals and the left are now beginning to talk about needing something beyond the search for weapons.
Right.
I think there is a possible turning point taking place. I find that there's a receptivity to talking about profiling that there wasn't just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Daniel, I've called it triage rather than profiling. I don't know if that satisfies anybody else, but it does seem to me that if you think about it in much the way that, you know, we accept has to be the standard in medical practice, where you have limited resources and you're obliged to apply them in a prioritized way in order to maximize the number of lives that you save, then that's so eminently commonsensical. And I think what you're suggesting is that in the aftermath of this near miss, the common sense of the American people, left, right, and center, is coming to the fore. And I give it to say that if we didn't actually have to lose more lives in order to arrive at this happy state of affairs, then that's a very good thing. Provided we actually do arrive at this happy state of affairs, we actually do implement this. What's your take looking forward on the likelihood that we will actually see these operational steps? But it's beyond operational. I mean, what you're really talking about, and this is where I'd like to go next with you, Dr. Daniel Pipes, is getting at an understanding of why these people are trying to do it as a way of helping you identify who the enemy is.
Before we get there, let me just note, first, I don't think that there'll be operational changes anytime very soon, but I think there is a psychological shift. Mm. Let me note that when you come into the country, when you go through customs, there is profiling taking place all the time, rampantly. They're looking at whether you're nervous or not, and whether you've got strange-looking objects with you and the like. That is accepted for some reason coming in, but not going on the plane.
Yeah, presumably it has to do with whether you're bringing in drugs or you're smuggling something else,
yeah.
Money or what have you.
Motivation is very interesting, because that's the one thing that tends not to get much discussed. I noticed after 9/11, this huge event that was consuming the national debate for weeks, if not months, there was almost no discussion about what was the purpose behind this.
Right.
And, you know, in the old days, 70s, 60s, 80s even, terrorism had a purpose. You hijacked a plane, you held the people, and you said, release X or Y, do this or that.
Mm-hmm.
Today, that doesn't take place. Today, bombs, I mean, had this bomb gone off and had it been gone off cleanly, this plane would have exploded somewhere over the northern part of the United States, and that would have been that. You wouldn't have known. Or maybe you could have traced it back to some obscure source, but there are no non-negotiable demands here.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the goal? Why are they doing this? I think there is a perception, and this is a big conjecture because one doesn't find this written out. I believe it goes back to Afghanistan. and a sense among the Mujahideen in Afghanistan that they brought down the Soviet Union, which is exaggerated. They had a hand in it, but they certainly didn't bring it down single-handedly. But nonetheless, they see themselves as having brought it down. And now it's half the United States. Yeah. And they're trying to use somewhat similar methods to what they used in Afghanistan, which say violence. It clearly isn't going to work. And I think sooner or later they will realize this. Blowing up a plane, what exactly does it do for them? But for the time being, I think this is their tactic of trying to bring down the order, the constitutional order of the United States as it now exists, through these means, whether it be 9/11 or this, you might say, you know, what are they talking about? But it is very hard for me to see that there's anything else really in their mind. So not just out to kill people, they're out to change the order.
Yeah. This is, after all, the larger purpose that Sharia demands of them, if they're adhering to it. Daniel Pipes, we're going to have to leave it there, I think. What I just want to close by saying is that I think your point about understanding the motivation is so well taken and so critical if we want to stop these folks from succeeding, either with the violent kind of jihad, which they seem increasingly to believe they can effect with desired results, or the stealthy kind, of which you have also written and thought long and hard. And we look forward to having you back to talk further about this motivational aspect of the program they call Sharia and that you understand so well. Dr. Pipes, thank you for the work you do at Middle East Forum and for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio. And please come again soon. Happy New Year in the meantime, and bless you.